We live in a technological age where computers navigate our plane, show us how to get from points A to B, and help diagnose health problems.
Technology is allowing us to outsource lots of tasks that we simply don't have time for, but is it helping us in the long run? What do we sacrifice? What do we lose by allowing computers to run the errands, help us socialize, make decisions, and solve problems?
With us now is Deborah Blum, a professor of journalism at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a columnist for the New York Times, and a blogger for Wired. She's also the author of The Poisoner's Handbook, and she edited the 2014 edition of the Best American Science and Nature Writing. Deborah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, one of the pieces in the Best American Science and Nature Writing, which you edited, is called The Great Forgetting. It's by Nicholas Carr. And it's about technology's impact on the way that we think, the way that we respond to things. What is it that we're likely to start forgetting now that we live in the age of apps and computers who can do just about everything for us? Sometimes it feels like.
Well, I love this Carr piece because it makes you think about the way our brains interact with sort of automation. And he uses some really interesting examples. He really starts with one that's kind of scary, which is he poses this question, what if pilots who are used to putting planes on autopilot forget how to fly and what happens when the automation fails? So that's a good example of how we can become too dependent on automation. And as we do that, as he argues, our skills diminish and our brains turn off. And I mean, and I can give you an example of what happens when we become too dependent if you want.
Well, before we get to that,
yeah.
This is kind of an age-old argument. You think of the printing press, probably think people were saying similar things. The assembly line. Is there something qualitatively different these days that's putting us more at risk?
Well, I think one of the points that Nicholas Carr makes is that our brains learn by acting. It makes perfect sense. You know, we train our brains. We put them through certain tasks. We sort of lay down neural pathways in which the next time you're in that situation, your brain says, oh, yeah, I know how to do that. But what if you're not training your brain? I mean, this is really the basis of his argument. You're not training your brain to think that way. You're not laying down the sort of, brain cell framework that's going to come back when you need it. You're just letting a machine do it for you. So when you're saying, okay, autopilot, fly my plane, or okay, GPS, make that map and I won't even bother and make a mental map, or okay, machine, do this for me, we're actually learning, we're actually losing skills and abilities, and I think kind of our sort of long history of engaging our brain, we lose some of that. And it's not necessarily catastrophic, but I like it because it makes perfect sense.
And you're right, there are some pretty harrowing examples in the Carr piece, certainly about flying airplanes. And it seems as though when the computers toss it back to the humans, the humans aren't able to do what they need to do in the right moment. What happens?
So he gave two examples of, speaking of catastrophic results, he gave two examples of planes that crashed. And in both cases, this was really fascinating to me. It was a situation where the instruments didn't work properly, or autopilot turns off when there's a problem. The planes are designed to say, okay, now there's a problem. We need some human judgment. Autopilot turns off, but the pilot is not used to making the decision and has not been actually training his brain to respond to these kind of situations. In this case, in two cases, the plane started slowing down and started to go down. And so the pilot responds by pulling up the nose of the plane, right? Let's get that plane up into a higher altitude. Well, when you pull up the nose of the plane, you're going against gravity and the plane will stall. And so in both of these cases, the planes went into stall mode, started to nosedive, and in one case, they just couldn't figure out what was going on and never corrected. And in the other case, the pilot literally did not let go of the stick that was pulling the plane upward, and the plane was down in less than a minute, right? And later in the piece, he talks about the training of pilots, in which now the FAA is saying, you need to turn off autopilot so pilots can actually train their brains to make judgment. And we have a concern that we're forgetting how to fly. And he raises the question, you know, Google Car, the car that'll drive itself, What happens when we're all doing that? And what happens when, say, that computer dies? Will we know how to drive? Will our brains have that capacity? So it's, are we putting ourselves at risk by becoming too dependent, and are we becoming dumber?
But it seems like there's a trade-off. Maybe the normal case and the technology is working, it's actually safer. Say you see a lot of drivers on the road where you wish a computer was driving their car
right.
for them. And so the norm is safer enough that those exceptional occurrences don't balance it out, and it's still a net positive.
Yes. And so, yeah, most of the time you can make an argument that autopilot has been much safer because people's attention drift. Mm-hmm. So, but it is always a, yeah, but if something works, you want the pilot to know what he's doing, right? And as we get more and more into this, are we going to put more and more people at risk? So, yeah, there is the argument for safety. I think that's a fair argument. I think there is also an argument that we still don't want to lose those skills. In that sense, the plane's an extreme example, right? I think about it more in my own life with GPS. I go down to Chicago to visit my son there. I don't have a clue what Chicago's like. I plug in the address and I go, and every once in a while I'll say to myself, where does my son live exactly? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. And I realize that if someone stole my phone or I broke it or something, I'd be hopeless. I could never navigate. I have no picture in my mind. I have no idea where he lives, right? So I've lost that ability to rescue myself. And at some level, we all want to maintain our ability to rescue ourselves from catastrophic situations.
And Nicholas Carr makes the point in his piece that we're kind of just at the beginning of this. Mm. We think the computers do so much, but really we've just begun to tiptoe through that door, and there's no telling what computers could eventually do for the human race, what they could take over in our day-to-day lives. Should we be worried about that and start preparing now?
Well, I don't feel like in a sci-fi sense. I mean, there's like arguments about artificial intelligence and whether, you know, in the kind of Stanley Kubrick way, eventually the automation will run us. But I do think that we can be smart about recognizing the risk. Like one of the points that Nicholas Carr makes is that in some programs now, they randomly just shut it off. You know, you're like sitting there, your plane's on autopilot, you're on autopilot, but what if you knew at some random point it was going to turn off? Then you would have to pay attention. And so his point is we have to figure out ways, even as automation increases, to keep ourselves engaged with the process and to keep ourselves part of the process. And I think he's right. I think we're smart enough to develop automation, and we're smart enough to get ahead of it.
You know, it seems like maybe a better approach is the human's in control and the technology's giving a nudge. And I'm thinking like new cars that you can switch on a thing that says, hey, you just turned on your right turn signal. I'm detecting something over there. Maybe give an extra look so that we're still in control and the computer is alerting us to potential trouble.
That's a smart idea, because what you really want is to keep yourself engaged, right? So imagine that you had your car, you're driving your cool Google car, you're on autopilot, some switch goes off and the car starts veering all over the road, but you weren't paying attention. So we've got to build into these systems like kind of checkpoints like you're talking about, hey, you. In which we're still engaged in the process. And also, you know, we want to be smart. We want our brains to work in all kinds of interesting ways. We want to keep all those complex neural pathways that make us who we are. And so the other thing to remember is, you know, there's things about the good old days in which you had to constantly think for yourself. Maybe you weren't always as perfect about it as a computer, but man, you were smart. We want to keep that.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that the computers, though, they're just freeing us up to think about grander things, loftier things?
And writing so we can, light operas, yeah.
Right, so we can stay a step ahead of them?
You know, and that's one of the arguments for it. If we just automate everything, then we're all free to be complete geniuses.
Right.
I kind of love that. I'm still waiting for my genius moment, actually. But, you know, you could go back to something as simple as the washing machine. There was a big argument that when washing machines were invented, women did all the washing, so I'm using women, that they'd be freed up to go out and be geniuses and do other things. But the problem is, once you had a washing machine, then you washed your clothes more often. We got more used to being clean all the time. So pretty soon you're putting just as much time into laundry as you were when you only washed every 2 weeks when it was a big hassle, right? So you have to also think, what's the consequence of using this technology?
Do we think about what's the consequences using this technology as a rule?
No, never. I think we just go, oh, this is so cool, let's do it. And I think we do that not just with technology, but with all kinds of next best things, right? I love this idea. And frankly, when I am driving around with my teenage son as he learns to drive, I'm like, where is that Google car? I just feel so much safer. So I'm going to be riding. I can't wait for it myself.
Now, briefly here, as we get towards the end of our time together, is this something that's just inevitable? Computers are going to get better. They're ascendant. We're descendant. And, you know, things are not looking good for us as a species in terms of intelligence and what we do. Is that part of what we just maybe have to make peace with?
You know, that's a good, I mean, I like to think that we're still, after I just trashed the idea that automation allows us to become more brilliant, I would like to think that we're going to continue to be smarter about this, that people like Nicholas Carr, who is a wonderful writer, and other people who think about it will say, oh, hello, you know, red flag, let's stop, let's think and be smart about where this is wanting to go so that we'll actually make some intelligent choices. Here's what we want this to do. Here's how we're going to make best use to it. And here's how we're going to remember that the human mind is still a wonderful thing and we want to take good care of it.
Thanks a lot for joining us today, Deborah.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
That was Deborah Blum. She's a professor of journalism at UW-Madison. She's the author of The Poisoner's Handbook, and she edited the 2014 edition of The Best American Science and Nature Writing.